Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arseblog Arsecast right here on arseblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. Hope you've had a nice time over the last few days with friends and family and all the rest. And of course, there is a lot of festive football on at this time of the year. Well, there's football on at this festive time of the year. I don't know which is more appropriate. It's also a weird time for podcasting because you don't quite know who's around, who's away, who's doing what. And also, there's that whole thing around this time of year where you just don't know what day of the week it is. So that makes it just a little more tricky to organize things. However, I did think that today, as it's Thursday, it's not. It's Friday. There you go. There's my brain, my Christmas brain on display for you right there. Because it was Mikel Arteta's first game in charge of Arsenal, I thought we had to have some kind of a podcast to discuss that, to discuss the 1-1 draw with Bournemouth and some of the bits and pieces that have come out of that game. Maybe not the result we were looking for, but there were some green shoots from the performance that we can discuss, some individual and collective things that we can chat about. And with me to do that is Lewis Ambrose. Hi, Lewis.
Hi, Andrew. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you too. Let me just start by asking you your quick thoughts on the appointment of Mikel Arteta as the new head coach. You know, in the context of what's happened perhaps at some other clubs in the last few weeks, Tottenham appointing Jose Mourinho, Everton have brought in Carlo Ancelotti, somebody who many Arsenal fans would have liked to have seen come in and was considered a safe pair of hands. Arsenal, of course, have gone in a very different direction. So your thoughts on the appointment of Mikel Arteta?
I don't know if they just went down the list and went for the second guy that didn't get it last time. I don't think that's necessarily exactly how it went down. I think if you look at... So Mourinho and Ancelotti obviously have their illustrious CVs, and I guess Unai Emery could be described as sort of a pound shop version of those two with the trophies that he's won and the experience he has. And I think... if they'd have gone for, say, Mourinho, if they'd have sacked Emery earlier or gone for Ancelotti now instead of him ending up at Everton, then maybe it's just a bit more of the same strategy that they went with Emery last time. And I think Arteta it's brave. I think that's why most of us, anyway, are excited about it, because it's brave. We don't really know how it's going to turn out. It could be a complete disaster. It could be amazing. You just don't know. We don't have any information to go on. Obviously, they have a bit more because they get to speak to him and they get to speak to anyone who's worked with him, but I mostly just think it's exciting. I think it's brave, obviously I really hope it works out. And I do wonder if they've also gone for Arteta to sort of earn a bit more patience from people. If you go and get Carlo Ancelotti and in a year things still aren't better, then it's sort of like, well, where do we go from here? Ancelotti's not going to develop as a coach anymore, so are we going to get better under him or not? Or do we sack him as well now? Whereas Mikel Arteta, maybe things in 12 months haven't really worked themselves out yet, but there's still a lot of squad turnover to be dealt with and that kind of thing. And Arteta's obviously, it's his first job. And maybe it just buys them a little bit more time to actually get this one right.
It is certainly an interesting and exciting appointment, and one that we all hope is going to work out. And I think you're right. It does give us a bit more time because people are aware, A, he's inexperienced, and B, there's a big job to do. It's no longer about sort of... about papering over the cracks that were already there. I think we've got to start building some new foundations. So bringing in a young coach with plenty of ambition and drive I think is a good strategy for the club where it is right now. It is going to take time, though, and it is a very, very big job. I think that's been evident over the last number of weeks and months as we've seen the performances of the team. And, you know, it's human nature, I think, to want things to happen quickly, but it's not going to. Realistically, it is not going to happen overnight or anything close to that. So in the context of all that, the 1-1 draw with Bournemouth yesterday, I don't know that anybody can be too surprised or particularly disappointed by the result. You know, it is going to take a while to drag ourselves out of this. Of course, you want to beat teams like Bournemouth, and there is an expectation when you're Arsenal that that's the sort of game you should be winning. But I think the context and the circumstances are almost unique at this moment in time. So what was your sort of general thought on what we saw yesterday at the Vitality Stadium? Was there anything in particular that stood out to you tactically or the way that the team operated that suggested Arteta's influence is beginning?
Yeah, I think just very simply, we just looked better. I think we looked to play the ball forward a lot quicker. I think in such a short space of time, there was almost as much of, and I think Arteta sort of suggested that himself before the game, especially, that it's almost as much an attitude change as anything else, that we need to get the ball forward. We need to keep the opponents in their own third, whether they're on the ball or we're on the ball. That's where we want to play the game. I think the quality wasn't there in the final third against Bournemouth, but I think we got a lot more often. We got into dangerous situations around the box. We had the ball. We looked at least like we were asking them questions.
Mm.
Which I don't think we've seen from an Arsenal team for quite a long time now.
Yeah.
And this isn't an Unai Emery thing. This predates Unai Emery away from home. We were still really good at home in Arsene Wenger's last season, but away from home, I don't know if we've played quite like that for a long time. And Bournemouth obviously is not the litmus test that we need to pass, but I think we've already said we're going to need a lot of patience. This is going to take a long time. I think there are going to be some amazing performances and then going to be some absolutely terrible performances all mixed in together, and you're not going to be quite sure which Arsenal is going to turn up on any given week for a little while. And the fact that I think we played a lot better, we looked a lot more positive with the entire team that Unai Emery and Freddie Ljungberg were working with, I think that's really, really promising. I think it's interesting to see Ainsley Maitland-Niles playing sort of centrally at times on the ball. When we had possession anyway, it was already, so you can see some of the principles of Pep Guardiola's teams, where you always have one player on the flank, but never more than one player on the flank. And it was really Nelson and Saka holding the width yesterday. It was interesting to see that. It wasn't sort of just the fullbacks or just the wingers, but mixing it up a little bit, asymmetrical, where Aubameyang would come in, but Nelson would stay out, and Maitland-Niles would come in, and Saka would stay out on the flank. And I think I was given the short amount of time that Arteta has had to work with the team between Everton and Bournemouth, I was really impressed by it.
The Maitland-Niles thing I noticed quite a bit, actually, and you could hear Arteta on the TV talking to him and talking to lots of them, but certainly there were moments where you're looking at Maitland-Niles and you're thinking, that is not where we've seen Arsenal fullbacks in recent times.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, that's definitely something. The other thing, I suppose, that caught my eye yesterday was Mesut Ozil. And look, it's a long, complicated story between Arsenal and Ozil, and we all know the ins and outs of what's happened and why he's been in the team and why he hasn't been in the team. But yesterday there seemed to be some way or some structured way of getting him into the game. And look, at 31 years of age, and given the trajectory that his career has had over the last little while, you know, he's not the guy for the long term at Arsenal. He's not the future, but what he is, or what he might have to be, is the present when it comes to creativity in this Arsenal team, because there is not a great deal of it in the squad. When you look around at the players that we've got, particularly in midfield, none of them are particularly creative. They're not creating a great deal of chances. Whereas Ozil yesterday, especially in the first 30 minutes, 35 minutes, I thought, found space quite a lot between the lines. Some of that, of course, was because we were making passes that we haven't made for a while, where players were pushing the ball through the lines and finding men with quick passes rather than sort of rolling it out sideways to be the easy option. But in the very short term, and it's something Arteta said, didn't he, when he took over, that Ozil is a big player or a massive player for the football club. You know, if you want to create a team that is capable of attacking, you do need players who've got some vision and who've got some craft. And right now, in terms of sheer talent and ability, he's the obvious choice. So it's going to be very interesting to see what Arteta can get out of him and if he can sustain that.
Yeah, I think it was the first time in a very long time that I've seen unanimous praise for an Ozil performance, except Tony Pulis, weirdly, on Amazon Prime. I can't believe Tony Pulis doesn't love Mesut Ozil.
Wow, surprise, yeah.
Yeah, it seemed like just his kind of player. I'd love to see Mesut Ozil try and launch a throw into the box from the halfway line, actually. Yeah, I think it was the first time in a long time that everybody can agree that Ozil had a really positive impact on the game. He was working really hard as well, I think. And I think Arteta's made it perfectly clear that nobody's going to get in this team if they're not working hard. And if he gives somebody a chance and they don't work hard, then they're going to be straight out. Otherwise, he's already going to be breaking one of his first promises, what he's calling non-negotiables. Mm. He's mentioned a few times, and I think that must be one of them. And I think he's probably had a word with Ozil and frankly told him how brilliant he thinks he is, but also told him that he can't play unless he does those things as well. It was nice. It was nice to see him getting the ball. I think he was dangerous in his passing. He didn't play things safe. He found Aubameyang once in the box. He found Saka out wide for a really good chance that he sort of fluffed across a little bit. And you're right, Arsenal were... It was sort of two or three passes in defence, and then they were finding him. And it wasn't the centre-backs playing six, seven, eight passes between each other like we've seen a lot of, especially recently. And yeah, if we can play like that, and I think also we've got to take something from it that it was an away game. Mesut Ozil's famed performances outside the Emirates. If I think right now, after the year and a half or two years really we've had with him since he signed that new contract, I think everybody would be quite happy if he just played well in home games from now on and gave us something a bit extra there. So if there's the odd away game he could perform in as well, then that would be quite something. I mean, we've had a few false dawns now, I think, with Ozil over the last couple of years, where there's a performance or three or four things in one performance where you think, maybe it's all starting to click again. And especially when he's been out of the team and the team's been awful, you think, maybe they actually do need him. And then he's come back in and it's made no difference at all. If they can find him regularly, and if he's got Aubameyang and maybe Lacazette running off him, and then there's no reason that he can't still have a big, big impact on Arsenal, I don't think. Especially because, as you say, there is a real lack of creativity in the team. I mean, I don't know, we might come on to Nicolas Pepe.
Yeah.
But without him, without Pepe starting at the moment, you don't really see anybody else in that entire team or maybe the entire squad that's going to create chances. And Ozil obviously provides that in abundance when he's on his game.
Mm. The Pepe thing is interesting. You know, there was a lot of people talking about why he wasn't in the team yesterday, and that's understandable when you pay £72 million for a player and he's not starting, and he hasn't started regularly this season. I think there have been some issues with adaptation and, perhaps some concerns about his work rate. And maybe those are assumptions that we make. I do have a feeling that he might be carrying an injury after the West Ham game, because that was a fairly brutal challenge and he had some bruised knee issues, and he came on yesterday. He only had 10 minutes, but got into the game quite quickly and was subjected to another really horrible tackle, which I think, you know, was skirting on a red. Certainly Cresswell's for in the West Ham game should have been a red card. Mm-hmm. What's your gut feeling on what's going on with him? We saw in the Man City game where he didn't quite do himself justice. Well, he didn't do well enough at all in one particular defensive situation. Is that something that he's going to have to get on top of to be in a Mikel Arteta team? It feels like it probably is. because he is somebody who's going to demand a lot physically from the players. You know, is it that or is it just general adaptation issues?
I think actually quite nicely when he came on yesterday, he did throw his weight around a couple of times as well, which was good to see. I think you might be onto something with the sort of fitness question. Obviously, he took those two heavy tackles from Aaron Cresswell at West Ham. And I wonder if the next game wasn't Manchester City, if he wouldn't have played it. Mm. And if that's sort of, if he's not fully recovered still, because I mean, he didn't go to Liège, I think, and then he played the game against Man City and he didn't play particularly well. Nobody played particularly well. And since then, yeah, he's been on the bench and it obviously wasn't used at Everton. I do wonder if that's part of the reason, if he's just not quite fully fit. And you see a lot of people yesterday trying to read into not just, oh, Pepe's not started a few games better now, but trying to particularly read into, oh, now we've got a different coach and he's not playing Pepe as well. That's three of them in a row. Is there a problem? And I just think we've got two massive home games coming up this week against Chelsea and Man United, such as the nature of the Christmas period every year. And if you were asking me, I think, obviously, especially with our record away from home, those two games are just a little bit bigger than the Bournemouth game. And I think if you'd have asked Arteta or told him Pepe can only start two this week, would you have him for Bournemouth, Chelsea or Man United? Mm. I think we'd all probably pick the Chelsea and Man United games. So maybe he doesn't start against Chelsea on Sunday or against United next week. We'll see. But I do think, yeah, there's possibly a bit of load management going on. Mm. And the other thing with a player, when we're talking about adaptation and how long it takes, it's just easier in home matches. It's just easier to come in and you've got the crowd behind you and you're not playing in some horrible little stadium with 20, 30, 40,000 screaming at you and screaming at their players to take you out. I think he'll get a bit more support from the home crowd, probably even a bit more protection from referees when the crowd's getting loud every time any 50-50 tackle goes in on him.
Yeah.
So I think we can all agree that Pepe's been a bit disappointing, at least in terms of end product so far. And if we want to build his confidence, if we want to help him adapt, then that's going to happen at the Emirates before it happens anywhere else. So I'm hoping that he plays more of a role in the games against Chelsea and Man United. And I'm hoping we see something from him. It's a shame that this has happened now with the injury that he got at West Ham, because it really did feel like that game had sort of announced himself with his goal and everything, and his assist for Aubameyang as well.
It's been a bit weird, hasn't it? Because, you know, he scored those two free kicks in the Europa League and we were going, that's it. That's the moment. You know, he's going to kick on from here. He's you know, won us a game in spectacular fashion, and it didn't quite happen. And then, of course, the West Ham game where he had the goal and the assist, and you're thinking, right, he's going to kick on from here. And maybe the reasons are different, but it just seems to be a bit unfortunate in that when he has these moments, you know, we haven't been able to quite build on them enough.
Yeah, I think it's sort of a nice little microcosm for the team on a whole over the last year or so. Is something happens and you think, well, oh, is that it? Is that click now? And then you turn up next week and it's just the same pile of shit anyway. actually, I'm a bit torn about us playing Chelsea and Man United next. I think it would be quite nice after the way we played at Bournemouth in Arteta's first game to now get a bit of a gimme at home. And I mean, there are no games like that in the Premier League, but you know what I mean? If we had Watford at home now or Norwich at home or someone like that, I'd have faith in Arsenal to find a way to mess it up. But I think things were promising at Bournemouth, and it would be nice to have a bit of a game like that to get off to a start. On the other hand, if they turn up and they play really well against Chelsea and Man United, then that will give them an even bigger boost. So it really could go one of two ways. You don't want to go three or four games without a win, I don't think, under a new boss. But
yeah. So I was just going to say, it's definitely a baptism of fire, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Unai Emery had it as well, didn't he? Like at the beginning of last season, with Man City and Chelsea in his first couple of games, and Freddie Ljungberg had to deal with playing Man City, even though he was only in charge of four or five games. So, yeah, it's a bit of a horrible trend developing at the moment, actually.
Okay, well, look, fingers crossed. They are going to be difficult games. Chelsea not necessarily in the greatest of form either, so maybe that's something we can take advantage of. United are a bit... hit and miss, it's fair to say, but, you know, this is Arsenal that we're talking about. While we are talking about the attacking side of things, let's chat just a little bit about Alexandre Lacazette, who looks like a player in a real funk. I know it's very difficult and perhaps even unfair to make too many individual assessments at a time when a team is not playing particularly well. And I think, you know, you could say that probably most of the players in this squad haven't reached their potential or produced any consistency this season. And that, of course, ties into the fact that the team haven't done that either. You know, even Aubameyang is scoring goals, but, you know, he drifts in and out of games and, you know, we can't expect him to carry us every week. Bernd Leno, perhaps the only player who's doing it week in, week out. But, you know, if he wasn't, we'd be in bigger trouble than we are right now. But Lacazette yesterday, he hadn't played for a couple of games, so he should realistically have been quite fresh in comparison to some of the opposition who've had a heavier schedule. He looks really out of sorts, doesn't he? Really sluggish at times, and the decision-making is just not quite there. Like, it's a half a second off, and in that half a second, a chance, as we saw in the second half, can go begging.
There was the chance as well in the first half when... Mesut Ozil put him through quite early on, and the ball just didn't quite sit right, and you're just thinking hit it anyway. But yeah, it's a bit at the moment. It feels a bit like he's waiting for the perfect opportunity, and it's not going to come. He needs a scrappy goal. I mean, he's always, at least since he joined us, he's always scored at least in fits and starts, and at the moment it's starting to feel like quite a long wait for a goal. And some players react quite positively to being taken out of the team for a couple of games. And Lacazette doesn't strike me as that sort of player. I think he wants to work his way into some form now. But it just doesn't appear to be happening for him anytime he's on the pitch. And obviously the situation we're in means you play Lacazette, you want Lacazette to get into form. So you either play him and it means you're taking Aubameyang out of his position and playing him somewhere else. Or you don't play him, and it means it's going to be longer until you manage to get a performance and a bit of a run of form out of him. So it's a little bit of a difficult situation, and I find it hard to see what's going to help him get out of it at the moment. I mean, we had it in his first season at the club when Aubameyang gave him a penalty. I think it was Southampton in Aubameyang. We won a penalty and Aubameyang let him take it to sort of get out of the funk that he was in, and It happened again. Well, not that exactly happened again, but there was another poor run of form about midway through last season where he just went a while without scoring a goal. Yeah, and I feel like with Lacazette in particular, maybe it'll click and then he'll score in six or seven in a row. But for the time being, it's hard to see where that goal is going to come from. And at the same time, Aubameyang, well, often not involved. I mean, did almost nothing at Everton, for example, but he invariably gets the one chance or scores the one goal. And it's very, it becomes very difficult, I think, to justify moving Aubameyang out the middle and sort of reducing the chances that he's going to get that one opportunity a game, like he did at Bournemouth yesterday. It's a really difficult situation because Arteta as well, he has to implement the way he wants the team to play, which I think if you look at, well, you look at the Arsene Wenger teams he played in, if you look at the Pep Guardiola teams he's coached, and the Barcelona teams where he grew up in the academy, I don't think we're going to see any two-striker systems from Mikel Arteta.
No.
So it's one or the other, or you play Aubameyang out wide like you did at Bournemouth, where he sort of drifts in and then Saka's left to cover the width on that side. Yeah, it's going to be one of these early challenges. And I think it's something that Unai Emery also probably never quite got to grips with, is what's the best way to use one or both of these two? And do we just use both of them because they'll score enough goals for us eventually, even no matter what it does to the rest of the team? Or do we use just one of them, but then you look a bit silly when you're losing games and one of them sat on the bench for 75 minutes? So it's a really difficult situation, and I think it's almost a... I don't think it's the worst thing in the world, as we may have suggested 6 months ago, that Arsenal will probably have to move one of them on. It will be very, it will be quite a shame if two of them leave in the summer, which right now it looks like it's sort of tending that way. But I don't think it would be the worst thing in the world if one of them had to go.
It is a difficult one, though, because the one that you would want to keep because he's a better goal scorer is Aubameyang. The Aubameyang situation is made a bit more complicated by the fact that he will only have 12 months left on his contract in the summer. And from everything that we're hearing and from the bits and pieces that are going around, you know, it doesn't appear as if he's going to be inclined to sign a new deal, in which case Arsenal are forced into a situation where they're going to have to make a decision. So if you're keeping one, it's probably going to be Lacazette, who's got longer on his contract and perhaps gives you a little bit more in terms of all-round play as a forward when he's in his best form, but doesn't match Aubameyang's efficiency in front of goal. So it is a really complicated situation. You wonder maybe if it's a case that we might end up selling both and going in a different direction in the summer, because the pros and cons sort of tell you if you're going to have to move one of them on, it's going to be Aubameyang. It's a weird one. Yeah, it's a situation that we found ourselves in after the people at the top of the club said, this is a situation we can no longer allow ourselves to get into, you know?
Yeah, no more players going into the last 2 years of their contract, except this one.
Well, look, that's something we're going to have to deal with a little bit down the line. I don't think anything is going to happen with either of those two before the summer. So I do think it is a case of one or the other, though. It definitely is. I'm not sure that there's a way of getting the two of them into the team and creating a balanced attack. And maybe it is a case of flanking Aubameyang or Lacazette, depending on the game and depending on the opposition, with wide players who can provide them with the sort of ammunition that they need. But that's another one of Mikel Arteta's challenges. Let's talk Granit Xhaka. He is, he wants to go to Hertha Berlin. That's what his agent has told a Swiss newspaper. Mikel Arteta said very publicly that he likes Xhaka a lot, and he was a player that Man City were interested in signing. He said he was happy that Arsenal signed him because he thinks he's a terrific player. Privately, though, he told Xhaka that he would be willing to let him go in the summer, and Xhaka apparently hasn't taken kindly to this. Which is confusing to me because it speaks to a kind of understanding of the situation from Arteta's point of view. He knows that Xhaka's time at Arsenal is limited because the player obviously wants to go. The Crystal Palace thing has been a major factor in that. But, you know, it's January, it's mid-season, it's very difficult to get a replacement in. So saying, look, I think you're a good player, but if you want to go in the summer, by all means, you can go. We'll get the money in. We can find somebody between now and then and, you know, do our transfer business. That seems a perfectly reasonable position for Mikel Arteta to have taken, but apparently, Xhaka has taken exception to this. First, why is it that Granit Xhaka, and you know this as somebody who knows the Bundesliga very well, and I know there are some factors here, so can you explain why it might be that Granit Xhaka is willing to go to Hertha Berlin? The fact that he wants to leave Arsenal doesn't surprise me whatsoever. I've, you know, got no problem with that at all. But why does he want to join a team which is sitting 12th in the Bundesliga, 4 points off relegation, and basically has no chance of making European football next season?
I cannot tell you why anyone at Arsenal would want to go in and join Hertha Berlin, to be completely blunt.
Do they not have new owners and there's a new sort of some new money coming in there, which might be the start of a project that he could get on board with?
There's a new investor, and the rumour has it, at least, that they're trying to really throw their weight around now. I think for... They are definitely an ambitious club, and they have been for some time, but not with the money to back it up. Now there is definitely a bit of money there. There is also the strange decision to appoint Jurgen Klinsmann as head coach until the end of the season. I think, obviously, there are other clubs in the Bundesliga that could afford a similar transfer fee, but they're not in such a nice city as Berlin. So I wonder if that's part of the particular link with Hertha. But I also think that they are going for sort of marquee targets and trying to sell quite a luxury new project kind of vision to players at the moment. I mean, they've been, at least the past couple of weeks, they've been linked with Julian Draxler from PSG, who we are all very familiar with. When it comes to transfer rumours, they've been linked with Mario Götze, whose Dortmund contract is up at the end of the season, and with Julian Weigl at Dortmund as well. So there is certainly an ambition to start doing bigger things at Hertha. And I think they just want a couple of marquee signings, also maybe a couple of players who have been there and done it in terms of playing in Europe and elevating the club to that kind of status. And yeah, they've been once in the Europa League in the last 10 years or so. They're not a club that really challenges even for the European places. So I think they're trying to change that image. And I can only imagine that they've sold Jackler on, and if they're trying to talk to Draxler and Götze as well, they're trying to sell them on the idea that you will be the man at the front of this project. You will be the guy in the team every single week, spearheading this and driving this forward, which I can see would be fairly attractive. And from Arsenal's perspective, I don't understand why Xhaka. I mean, it's not like he's out the team. He's playing every week still, or again, he's playing every week now. Obviously, he's got the Euros coming up in the summer, and it's not like his place there is under threat by being at Arsenal at the moment. I just wonder if this sort of project and vision's been sold, if he's worried it won't be there in the summer, and if Hertha either would move on to other targets, or if they would even get relegated, because there's a real possibility that they get relegated this season. So maybe that whole project, that whole idea kind of falls down if the deal doesn't go through now, is the only way that I can, the only sort of rationale I can put behind him trying to force this to happen at the moment.
Because
then they are not an attractive team to play for. Sure. They are not competing for anything. And yeah, I mean, it's a sign of how bad this situation is with Xhaka, at least how he feels.
Yeah.
And it's got to be a sign of how far Arsenal have fallen that a player is desperate to go to to Hertha.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think we can't underestimate the player's desire. I mean, you could be right. He could be sold on this project and how important he might become to it, and to be kind of a figurehead at a club, you know, must be an attractive thing, particularly when the situation at the club you're at the moment is so difficult. From, you know, speaking to people, you know, Xhaka isn't happy and hasn't been happy since the Crystal Palace thing, and there were reasons why he could legitimately be unhappy, and other reasons why he probably should be a bit more circumspect about some of the things that he says. But I think what's indisputable is that he wants to leave. His agent has said they've got the agreement, they've spoken to Sanyehi, they've spoken to Mikel Arteta. So if you're Arsenal, and this is a player who's got a troubled history, you know, with the fan base, he was the captain, then the captaincy was stripped from him. You know, that's a difficult thing for a player to contend with. I think he's got to look at himself for part of why that happened, a significant part of that. But going into the nuts and bolts of why he feels the way he feels isn't really going to help if that's just how he feels. So if you're Arsenal and you've got a player who has very publicly made it clear that he wants to leave, what do you do in the January transfer market? I mean, my feeling is if he's really that determined to leave, and if Hertha Berlin are willing to pay money for him, we should take the money and reinvest. Because Arteta has demanded from his players, you know, things, as you said, were non-negotiable. He's demanding full commitment. He said something along the lines of, you know, well, anybody who doesn't want to be here, or anybody who doesn't want to live the way I expect this team to live, you know, can pretty much leave. I'm paraphrasing, but that's basically what he said. And if you're a player who has publicly said you want to leave, you are not fully committed. I'm not saying he won't do a professional job when he's on the pitch, But in terms of the overall project and in terms of getting behind a new coach and getting on board with what he wants, you know, why would you invest time and coaching and all of those things into a player who's just going to go in 6 months anyway? It feels like, okay, maybe the Xhaka camp have forced our hand a little bit in that regard. Maybe it makes it easier for them to get what they want. And maybe it will be seen as Arsenal acquiescing to a player's demands. But I'm not really sure what choice there is if he's so determined to get out.
Yeah, I think it depends on, firstly, if Arsenal can sign a replacement. And if they can sign a replacement that they're satisfied with, then I don't think there'll be anyone standing in Xhaka's way in January. If they can't, then I guess it comes down to how much they think they need him and how well they think or how committed they think he'll be on the pitch. If they just flat out refuse to sell him and they think that that'll be fine and he'll still perform and give everything on the pitch like he did at Bournemouth on Boxing Day, then I don't see much choice but to force him to stay. I don't know if there is much choice but to force him to stay if they can't sign someone, as long as they still think that he'll perform. And I do think there's a lot of things people have said about Granit Xhaka over the past few months or the past few years, but especially the past few months. I don't think he's the sort of guy that would go on the pitch and not give everything, because I don't actually think he's capable of not giving everything. And I think sometimes that's his biggest weakness and to his detriment, that that he makes desperate tackles and rash decisions because he's trying too hard and not actually thinking about what he's doing. I don't think if they kept Xhaka that he'd kick up a big stink and not perform or refuse to play or anything like that. So for me, it really comes down to whether or not they can sign someone that they're happy can take his place or not. And that doesn't have to be somebody who is really experienced and plays every week. I mean, we've got Matteo Guendouzi, who I don't know if he's been quite as good as some people think so far this season. I think the team's been terrible and he's not been terrible. And his reputation is certainly good enough to play a lot of our games. And even if they could sign somebody who they also need to develop but can sort of split those minutes with Guendouzi, then that would be fine by me. The sort of the issue that we're not talking about is maybe Lucas Torreira, because if Granit Xhaka says he's got an agreement with someone and the club say, well, all right, then there's the door, Lucas Torreira could just as easily do the same thing. I mean, there's constantly rumours linking him with a move back to Italy. And yeah, I guess the club just has a line they need to tread between, well, if you don't want to be here, then get out. And actually, we need to keep hold of some of these players, because at least until the summer, because otherwise we're going to be in a bit of trouble.
Well, look, it's not as if our faith in the people running the football side of this club has been in any way shaken over the last little while. So I trust in them completely to do the right thing by the club, by the team, and by Mikel Arteta, of course. We'll see what happens. January transfer window is open in a few days' time. We'll see how quickly things happen. But for now, we better leave it there. Lewis, thank you very much and Happy New Year.
Thank you.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Thank you very much indeed to Lewis. You can find him on Twitter at LG Ambrose, at LG Ambrose. And once we get a few games into the Mikel Arteta reign, he'll be doing one of his tactics columns on arsblog.com, looking at what exactly it is that Mikel Arteta is doing, how he's trying to do it, and how successful it might or might not be. Hopefully very successful, because we have got a big, big game on Sunday coming up against Chelsea. And, you know, a London derby is always a big game. This one feels even more so, because for all the excitement and the optimism and the buzz and the energy that's come with this new appointment and the people that have come with him and the hopes and expectations that we have, however realistic they are or might not be, we are a football team and a football club badly in need of a win, badly in need of points, confidence, all of the things that will get us going back towards the right end of the table. Because, well, you know, we've played 19 Premier League games this season. We have won just five. Just five. We've lost five as well, but drawn nine. A lot of draws. Maybe that is something we can just draw on a little bit. If we were losing all the time, it would be far worse, of course. But Arteta has to get things going, and hopefully he can do that on Sunday against Chelsea. It's going to be tough. It's always a tough game against them, but at home, hopefully with the crowd well and truly up for it, and maybe we can take advantage of a Chelsea team which haven't been brilliant in the last couple of weeks. Fingers crossed, it would be great if we could do that. You know, you take anything you can get at this point and just try and build on that. So whatever way a win occurs, if it occurs, I will take it on Sunday, and we can go from there. James and I will be here on Monday to pour over that game in the Arsecast Extra, so please join us for that. If you're a Patreon member, watch out a little bit later on today. We're going to drop the Decade of Banter podcast, in which James and Tim Stillman and myself look back on 2010 to 2020 from an Arsenal point of view and some of the most banterous moments, good and bad, that have occurred in that decade. So that's available if you're an Arsblog member on Patreon. If you want to sign up, it's just a fiver a month, patreon.com/arsblog. Instant access to all the content that's there, and, you know, ad-free apps, ad-free podcasts, and all the rest. So patreon.com/arsblog. Just a final word, as I'm sure many of you are well aware, we lost our friend Dave Faber, the Gunaholic, on Christmas Day. Any day, of course, is a sad day to lose someone that you love, but Christmas, it just seems a little bit more poignant. My thoughts are with Dave's close family and friends and loved ones who are going to miss him, of course, but also to all of the people who knew him online and offline, on social media, on his website, gunaholic.com, which has its own community of regulars in there, as we do here on Arsblog and every other site, who are going to miss him as well. And I think it was a testament to just what a great guy he was that there was such an outpouring of sympathy and, is goodwill the right word? I don't quite know how to express it, but my Twitter timeline and, you know, mentions and emails, just everybody saying what a great guy he was. And he was a really great guy, and we're all going to miss him terribly. The other week I played out with one of his favorite songs, but an artist that Dave and I had in common was another Dave. This is a song that for some reason reminds me of him. I don't quite know why. It's just one of those things where you have a picture of somebody in your mind when you hear a song, and this is that song. So for David Faber, Gunaholic, this is David Bowie with the London Boys, and I'll catch you guys on the next one. Until then, cheers, bye-bye.
The bell strikes another night. Your eyes are heavy and your limbs are light. You've bought some coffee, butter and bread. You can't make a thing because the meat is dead. You've moved away. Told your folks you're gonna stay away. Bright lights over Wardour Street. You hope you make friends with the guys you meet. Somebody shows you round. Now you've met the London Boys. Things seem good again. So someone cares about you.
decidedly ill. You're gonna be sick, but you mustn't lose fight. To let yourself down would be a big disgrace with the London boys. With the London boys. You're only 17, but you think you've grown. In the month you've been away from your parents' home, you take the pills too much, and you don't give a damn about the job you've got, as long as you're up with your London boys. London boy, or a London boy, your flashy clothes are your pride and joy. A London boy, a London boy, you're crying out loud that you're a London boy. You think you've had a lot of fun, but you ain't got nothing, you're on the run.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.